Welcome to Respect Life Radio. My name is Deacon Jeff Bennett with Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese of Denver. And remember, you can listen to all of our shows at respectliferadio.com.
Today, our guest is a returning guest, Charles Frawney. He is the founding theology teacher of Christ the King Catholic School in Huntersville, North Carolina, where he taught there for 10 years. He left teaching to found the Slaying Dragons Apostolate. The apostolate is dedicated to sharing the wisdom of spiritual warfare. He is an author of several books, and his latest is The Occult Among Us, which we're going to discuss today. And Charles, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you, Deacon. It's good to be back.
Tell you what, I always enjoy your books, and I always learn something from reading them. And it really is a reminder, this Occult Among Us, exorcists and former occultists expose the nature of modern evil. The more you sit back and the more you're aware, the more you see this modern evil. Just seems like it's everywhere, doesn't it?
Yeah, that was one of the things that really sounded the alarm when I first started doing this research, is that the occult is essentially everywhere. It's not everywhere in the big manifestations, but it's surreptitious, this great word, this subtle evil sneaking in so many sectors of our society.
Well, and before you even get into the book, you have several great endorsements, and maybe you can talk about them. I know we've had two of the three of them on our show in the past and have been great guests. But so just to let people know just kind of the credibility of the work you're doing, who are some of the people endorsing the book?
Yeah, and this has been a great blessing, especially as a small Catholic publishing company, just all doing it all myself. But Bishop Athanasius Schneider and Bishop Joseph Strickland, and then the prominent exorcist, Monsignor Rossetti from D.C., they've endorsed Slaying Dragons, The Rise of the Occult, and then the new one, The Occult Among Us. One thing Monsignor Rossetti said that I liked, he said, This is a must read for exorcists and priests in general and for all the faithful. If I were a parent, I would have my children read this before they might be tempted to dabble in the occult, lest they do so, thinking it to be harmless.
Well, and that's how the evil one works, right? We deny that he exists, and then if we do even acknowledge he exists, that he's harmless, he really can't do anything. And to a certain effect, right, he can't do anything God doesn't allow him to do. But when we welcome him into our lives, then, Katie bar the door.
That's right. And that's the big deal, that if we are faithful to our Lord, we really don't have much to worry about. I mean, we may have a battle to fight, but we're not going to be attacked randomly, snuck up on, sabotaged. The devil is actually afraid of us. I lay this out in Slaying Dragons. But it applies very poignantly now when we're immersed in a paganized, occult-driven culture. Like, even though this is a grave evil and it's destroying people, if we're faithful, we don't have to worry about it coming after us, though there are residual effects. If it destroys society, then we are living in that society, then we have that to deal with.
Well, and what I really enjoyed about this book was just really all the interviews, right? All this firsthand experience, knowledge, and advice that we can receive from all these people who, many of which, dabbled in this stuff and can tell us exactly what's going on and not kind of sugarcoat it. How was it trying to interview all these individuals, and did you really have to cut the list down?
Yeah, towards the end, I had to, I think there were three people who reached out to me, maybe four, and I'm like, I just don't have time to do any more interviews, and I kind of have to shut the gates, because the information was just pouring in, not so much from former occultists. I used 16 former occultists with interviews. I had about four more that I had to just stop, but when it came to the information I was pulling from the culture, from society, that's where I had to just stop the research, because I've got to finish this book. But getting connected to these former occultists was divine providence. I was not sure when I first had the idea, like, well, I know one former witch, but, how am I going to get connected to these others? But thankfully, I'd already networked with parish priests and exorcists and people who were devout and in the know in the church and things, that's where the 16 people came from.
Well, and you mentioned, just now, witchcraft and, you know, kind of Wicca. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that, because I've seen people on various, I was watching a pipe show the other day and he said, yeah, I used to be a former Wicca and now I'm Catholic. But how expansive is that? I mean, because it really, some people may say, I've never heard of it, but it really is all over the place, not only in internet, but I think there's even brick and mortar stores, aren't there?
Oh yeah. So, the prevalence of witchcraft is one of the things I lay out in The Rise of the Occult, and then in more detail, more specifics, in The Occult Among Us, because one of the statistics is, I can't remember the dates exactly, but in between 2010 and 2022 or 24 now, you watch the statistics of the number of Presbyterians in the United States slowly dropping. And I think it was 2018, they tied with the number of Wiccans, the number of registered Wiccans. And this is important because most witches, occultists, even Wiccans don't register. So we don't really know the numbers, but the ones that admitted to it were tied with the number of Presbyterians in 2018 at 1.4 million. And then the last 6 years, Presbyterians kept diving closer to 1 million. And the Wiccans have skyrocketed, well, not skyrocketed, but gone up to at least 2 million. So we see a replacement, you know, at least when it comes to some of the minor Protestant groups. But you see brick and mortar stores, like you're saying, and one thing people can do, not to generate fear, but just to be aware, is go on to Google Maps. This is how I started doing it a couple of years ago, and put in metaphysical supply store. And that's the tag, for whatever reason, of these stores. But then it'll pop up and then zoom in on the map, zoom in onto different cities like your own, and you'll see it populate. And then go in and check them. Most of them, I found like 90%, 95% of the ones that pop up are witchcraft, New Age, crystal, this kind of occultic store. Some of them are just like, you know, rock collecting or curiosity shops and are not occultic, but you'll see them like in Wilmington, North Carolina. I gave a talk there. And before I gave the talk, I did this analysis, and there were, I think, 14 of these stores just in that city in Wilmington.
Well, and I think the raising of awareness like you're doing is critical because, you know, sometimes parents don't realize what their kids are getting into. And you know, the internet's kind of the gateway to all this stuff, and they don't even have to leave their home. So it really is important that parents, grandparents, read this stuff so that they, one, can educate their kids, but also kind of monitor what they're doing to see if they're dabbling in this stuff, right?
Yeah, they'll see the signs because the internet is a huge problem. And I saw that in a lot of my interviews because with the dawn of the internet, all information is accessible all the time by everybody everywhere, even the clueless and the ignorant and the stupid and the youth. In that, right. Sadly, are categorized there. And you're going to find all forms of occult. And some of these experienced occultists who were doing it for like 30 years that I talked to, he said, John is his pseudonym. He pointed out how dangerous dabbling is now, because if you find it on the internet, you can find the deepest, darkest stuff and you'll start summoning demons right away. Like it used to be just a slow, progressive curiosity, and you would take, you know, rites of initiation and things to get deeper access to this dark occult stuff. But now people are just jumping right in. And there's also this mixing, like Wicca tries to portray itself as very, you know, earth loving, kind. And some of them are, not all occultists are mean. But Wicca is this overlap. They're starting to mix everything. Wiccans are starting to mix deep satanic practices into their own Wicca practice. So in the book, I lay out a lot of the common things that people are getting into. So like you were saying with parents, they need to know what possibly their kids are being exposed to if they have shown any inclination towards any form of the occult.
Well, it is, you know, critical that we do arm ourselves, but, you know, it does remind us, right? When we practice any kind of this activity, right? Whether it's New Age, Reiki, you know, any of the things that you mentioned in the book and you have examples of, right, all we're doing is really providing these portals for the evil one to come into our lives and really, you know, and not everybody's going to be possessed, right, where you need an exorcist necessarily. But why are we taking those chances? And the more we dabble, the more we open themselves up and those portals become just gateways for the evil one to enter, right?
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I was looking for, and I found was a common thread that unites, that goes through all the different kinds of the occult: Wicca, witchcraft, New Age, Satanism, Reiki, yoga, is this energy. So there's this sharing of the central premise, this self-deification and this manipulation of energy. And one of the neat things I did, which I don't recommend other people doing, but I had to do for the research, was listening to and reading what practicing occultists are saying about the occult. And this was very eye-opening because they also warned about certain dangers that they admit are present in the practice. But it was the daughter of Anton LaVey, the founder of the Church of Satan. She gave a number of interviews in the 80s. So I listened to these interviews. It was with a Protestant guy, Bob Larson. But she and her husband were interviewed at the same time. And they said, when it came to the idea of white witches and white magic, all they and all forms of the occult essentially say, that's a farce. That doesn't exist. There is no distinction between good and bad magic, between a good and bad witch. A witch is a witch is a witch, is what they all agreed on. If you're a witch, you're using satanic power to do whatever you're doing, even if you claim you're doing something good. And then on that note, one of the Wiccans I interviewed, she said, in the beginning, you tell the youngins, the new Wiccans, that we just do this for good. We try to promote good things. You know, we're not trying to harm anybody, but a couple of years in, you start to realize the power you're working with, and then you start to get corrupted.
Yeah, it is, you know, astounding when you read just kind of the depth and how much this has permeated our society. Was there anything during your research, because you've been doing this for a while now, that surprised you, that, you know what, I never would have thought of that?
Well, that's a good question. At this point, I think I've seen so much and I've processed it so long that I'm not really shocked anymore. That kind of newness has worn off. But going back, I think one of the initial shocks was when, like, so one of the things the former occultists were saying is that one of the crosses that they carry now is that they can't help but see the occult everywhere it is in the culture. So they feel like this is a burden, almost a wound. So they can't live in ignorance. And I think that's one of the things that surprised me. Once I started to hear this and I started to see it, I heard it from exorcists, from parish priests, from these former cultists, and I started to see it in the culture. That was one of the things that I think really shocked me when I admitted, yeah, the occult is popping up everywhere in symbolism, in suggestion, in gesture, in language, in lingo, in philosophy, and then in explicit practice. And one thing that early on, by God's providence, I went over to a Catholic friend's a gathering at a Catholic's home, and he handed me a beer glass. And the beer glass had occultic imagery all in it. But you wouldn't know if you didn't know to look.
Right.
And I was looking at it like, whoa, what is this? And I kept staring. And in these squiggly lines, I saw all of these grotesque and like partially nude images. And like, why do you have this in your house? What is that? Have you never looked at this glass?
Yeah, can I drink out of a bottle, please? Yeah.
Yeah, like, I don't want this. Give me something else. But that I think, was the moment when I started to realize these people were probably onto something. And then I realized they were right as I continued my research.
Well, and I know when we interviewed Monsignor Rossetti, and he talked about, you know, the demonic using phones and texting and things, and you bring that up in your book. So, you know, it's the occult is reaching out to us. It's not always us just, you know, doing it blindly. We're being tempted. And so I think this book really helps remind us of that. But how important is that for people to understand that it's not just this passive entity that we have to fall into? It is actually active in the world.
Yeah. So the entities, like the Wiccans and witches, think they're summoning these old pantheons of deities and talking to these great goddesses from the past that have been banished by Christianity, and or just dealing with spirits or just channeling energy in the occult. But these are all real demons. And they're the same demons that are constantly tempting us. So we're constantly, no matter what you do, you're going to be tempted by a demon throughout your day. It's not a big deal. You just ignore it. And that's all they're going to do. They're not going to attack you in any special way. It's just normal temptation. But that's part of the same diabolical network. Because they have to remember there are billions. We have no idea. Billions, trillions of demons working to destroy everybody on the planet, whoever's on the planet at the time. So they're working all these different avenues. And one of them is the occult and the corruption of culture and the suppression of Christianity and fear and addiction to technology and addiction to food, the first world curse, as I sometimes like to call it. But so they're the same demons that are tempting us daily are trying to incline us toward this fallen culture that they are crafting at the same time. And we're in this culture that is just steeped in a satanic philosophy. I mean, just look around with abortion and all this sexual immorality and disgusting perversions. That's our culture. And that's being crafted by demons and by people who are, in cahoots with demons, at least intellectually. So we do have to be very much on guard because they're trying to work us over, these demons, through slow, steady temptation, slow, steady pressure until we break a little bit, and they push on that break point, that wound, and they push us further, and they could easily push us into the occult in this generation.
You know, it is a reminder, and, you know, towards the end of the book, you talk about how evil can occupy things. And I don't know why it should surprise me. We interviewed a woman who was possessed. It took a year to finally clear her, but how her mirror in her bedroom was actually possessed. And you talk about in the book, right? Be careful even buying antiques, right? We ought to bless these things we bring into our home because we don't know what kind of curse may be upon them. And it really is a great awareness.
Yeah, the mirror thing is an occult principle. Like, there were some witches that a former witch that I interviewed, and she said at Halloween they would summon spirits through their mirrors. And even in my book, I have an anecdote from someone that I was connected to, so definitely not the person you interviewed. And they had an experience where a mirror came from her sister's house, and her sister was deep into some New Age stuff. And the mirror, they think, was a portal to disturb their daughter. And then as soon as they destroyed this mirror, the whole life changed drastically. So, yeah, that was another thing I think that surprised me was just the number of times I heard from parish priests and exorcists and former occultists that demons appear to attach to things through curses. There is some debate about how that actually works and whether we need to worry too much, but it's very simple. If you bring something into your house, to just bless it. I mean, if you're a Christian, a Catholic in a state of grace, you have the power with the Holy Spirit working through you to share the grace that flows through you to all of your possessions. And that's why we get our homes blessed and our cars blessed, and pretty much everything can be blessed. And you can sprinkle holy water on anything in doubt and God will protect it. And we're good. But we need to be vigilant, unfortunately, on a lot of fronts like that.
So you interviewed exorcists as well. What are they seeing out there now? I mean, I know the last time we interviewed an exorcist, they were seeing an increase of activity. Are they still seeing that increase? And what were they telling you that's in this book that can help others?
Yeah. So I interviewed, I think it was 8 exorcists in addition to like 7 parish priests who have experience with all this stuff. So the last interview I did on this was, I guess, 2023, sometime around, yeah, maybe, or late 2022. But one of the things that was interesting in this book, The Occult Among Us, was the chapter on COVID, chapter 18, because that kept coming up. And it also ties into the Pachamama idolatry that happened in 2019. So 2019, late 2019, you have this idol being brought into the Vatican area and all the stuff that happened there. And then early 2020, you have the emergence of this new virus. But when I talk about COVID in my book, I make the point that when I say COVID, I'm not just referring to the virus, but the world's reaction to it and the church's reaction to it. The whole world shut down. The churches shut down. Holy water became dangerous. You know, they got rid of holy water. It could be COVID germs in there. I mean, this is a sacred liquid that our Lord has essentially touched through his church and endowed with special healing properties, healing specifically, if you read the blessing. So they were saying that, yeah, there's definitely this uptick of activity. Demons seem bolder. Demons seem more aggressive, braver, like they know something's up, like they're a little bit off the leash. But it's very sensitive to what Christians are doing. So there's all this grace that's flowing from our Lord through his church, and we are members of that church. So we are that church, the mystical body. The more, the holier we are, the more grace can flow. The less holy we are, the less grace will flow. And that was one thing that exorcists talked about a lot. A lot of the problems we have now is most Catholics are lazy or just essentially non-practicing, even if they are practicing, even like devout. Like I struggle, you know, I regard myself as a traditional Catholic, but fasting is something I didn't grow up with. Our culture is very materialistic. There's just food and sweets and sugar everywhere. I mean, we are conditioned to be very gluttonous. And most of us just give in to that. And that limits the amount of grace that can flow into the world. And that lack of grace causes the demons to be a little bit less, less encumbered, less inhibited, and they can have a freer reign. And that's dangerous.
Well, and what's the old saying? Fat, dumb, and lazy is no way to go through life, because it does hurt us in more ways than one. But, you know, you talked about holy water, but you also have a chapter in this book towards the end, I think it's chapter 23, where you talk about the power of sacramentals and its ability to block occult activity. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, that was a fun chapter for many reasons, just because it's neat what I was able to find. And I was thrilled that I actually found enough to make a whole chapter. And right now I'm engaged in a lot of sacramental research, like what the church used to do and believe about these sacramentals. But in that chapter, so there's one of the things that pointed me in this direction is the idea of, you know, can you give a medal, a miraculous medal to a practicing occultist or someone who's trying to leave? Will they desecrate it? What do occultists desecrate sacramentals? And they do. That was an interesting thing that I found out. Medals, holy water, they will go after these things and defile them. But there are also times in the history of the church, 1800s, I think is when I pulled some, in 1900s, where there would be a cultist traveling to a city. I think a bishop sent one of his priests to go to the theater where the occultist was going to perform, and he told the priest to sprinkle holy water all around the stage. And then shortly after, the occultist showed up, and he was unable to do his magic. He was unable to perform in the way he normally was. Something was blocking him. And this also happened where a nun knew an occultist was coming to a city, and she hung a St. Benedict medal out her window in the direction of whatever theater was that he was going to be performing. And for several nights, they were unable to conjure these spirits, and they had to give everybody's money back and send everybody home. So these are some significant ones that are in books, and that if you read the actual blessings, if you know what these sacramentals are empowered by the church to do, you would use them too to protect your home and cautiously to give to a cult. If someone's open to it, well, that's how the miraculous medal became the miraculous medal. It helped convert a Jewish man. I can't remember if he was into the occult at all, but he was slightly open. And that's the key. If the person's open, that means God can, they have a little bit of faith, so God can deliver a special grace, the grace of conversion. But you have to be careful not to give these to practicing occultists, because they would potentially defile them, as I found from my research.
It is so important. I think, you know, part of the beauty of the books that you're putting out is, you know, it does make it a clear choice between God and Satan, but it does take the excuse of ignorance away, right? We can't pretend that we're, you know, just kind of coasting through life and everything's peachy keen. You do raise the awareness so that if somebody says, you know, I didn't know, it's kind of their own fault, because there's, you know, with all the materials out there, especially all the stuff you're putting out there, it does shed light into the dark areas of this world so that we should never be surprised or caught off guard.
Yeah, and that's one of the things, because I was a high school theology teacher for 10 years, and we talked about ignorance. There are two kinds, vincible and invincible. Invincible ignorance means it's a lack of knowledge that you have a cure for. Like, if you're like, well, what does the church teach about X, Y, and Z? Well, in this age, you can Google it, just look it up online, or grab a catechism, or talk to a priest. We can get all the answers. So especially now, like with the number of exorcists speaking and with my books and other exorcists are publishing their books, we don't have, you're right. Like, we have a cure for the ignorance about what the devil's doing and what the occult is up to. And we need to know better, because like I mentioned earlier, everybody in this culture, I would say, is a little bit susceptible to the allure of the occult if we're not careful.
And we're down to about the last minute and a half or so, and I know these always go way too fast. What are you kind of working on now? I know you're out on the circuit doing a lot of interviews for this book, but do you have any future projects that are kind of bouncing around in your head?
Yeah, I'm working on a couple. So St. Alphonsus Liguori has been a great, my favorite saint for probably 20 years. So I'm working on not a reprint, but most of his writings are very poorly known. So I'm trying to pull some of his writings up and feature them in some books with some commentary. And then, as I mentioned, I'm doing a lot of research on sacramentals. So I'm hoping to present some good books there that'll be just as practical as these recent books I've made. And then I have one that I don't know when I'm going to finish it, but it's almost done. It's a book exposing Santa Muerte. This is my last book about occult topics, but this is its own book because I found so much disturbing and important information about this, what's known as the fastest growing new religious movement in the Americas.
That'll be a good one to get. I'd love to have you on for that one as well. How can people track what you're doing?
Yeah, so my website, and I encourage people to go there and subscribe. I rarely send emails. It's slayingdragonspress.com. So slayingdragonspress.com. And you can order all these books directly from me. I'm happy to sign them. Of course, no extra charge with that. Sometimes I have discounts there. You can also find me on Facebook under my name and also Slaying Dragons Press. I have two pages on Facebook, and I'm on Twitter. I'm trying to get going on Instagram, same names, but I'm not that tech savvy. I have a YouTube channel, the Slaying Dragons Apostolate, so you can go subscribe there, and occasionally I put things up.
Respect Life Radio is produced by Catholic Charities in the Archdiocese of Denver, and remember, you can listen to all of our shows at respectliferadio.com.